You're listening to the Philly Maker Faire podcast. My name is Laura Chanot.
And I am Valerie Chiguendo.
And I'm Jeremy DePrisco.
We're here celebrating the creators, builders, inventors, and artists that bring their visions to life at the Philly Maker Faire.
This week, we're talking with Amberlee Venti, founder of Pippi Sips.
Pippi Sips develops breast milk pumping accessories that make it easier to pump and store breast milk. Thank you for joining us today, Amberlee.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to talk about your product.
I'm so excited that the product is ready and we can really talk about it.
So when did you decide to begin Pippi Sips and why?
Yeah, great question. So in 2017, I'd had my second daughter, and I've worked in mental health in Philadelphia, social work and mental health my whole adult life. And at the time of having my second daughter, I was running an outpatient clinic in Kensington, Philadelphia. The opiate epidemic was really on the rise. So the unit that we worked at was just very crisis ridden. We had people coming in our doors that were feeling suicidal or like hurting somebody or wanted to get sober from an opiate or were in withdrawal, all sorts of things. So, and we also had a walk-in clinic. So that really made it like our doors were always open to people who were experiencing difficulties. So it just, the unit itself just had a ton of crisis. And then part of the difference between my first and second child and my breastfeeding and pumping experience was that when I had my first child, I wasn't in a leadership role. And I also wasn't, it was just, I was less in charge of making sure that the crises were figured out.
Right.
So it was a lot easier when you're breastfeeding and pumping mom. It's going to be difficult no matter what to find time and space to pump. Like that's just, we know that step one is just like, how are you going to navigate that? Finding time to pump, finding a clean space to do it and all of that. So that's already an issue. But like I said, with my first child, I was not in a leadership position. So I had a little more space for that. But then when I had my second daughter in 2017, I was running this unit, still trying to pump and store my milk, but I had way less time because I was the person that every, you know, therapist or psychiatrist came to and said, you know, I have this individual, this is going on. How are we going to make sure that they get out of the building safely or they get the treatment they need? So time was an issue. And then where I stored my milk was also an issue. So I had this second factor that made everything more difficult. And that was that the fridge where you put your lunch and snacks and drinks in is where I stored my milk, but it was in the room where they did group therapy on the unit. So it was number one, not appropriate to go in there when people are discussing traumatic events, their deepest, darkest secrets, all sorts of stuff like that. And then also, you know, like at the end of the day, if a group therapy session was going on and I needed to get my milk out of there, it would also kind of be like held hostage in there. So there was getting it in and out was like this thing that was always happening. And then another factor that really made pumping hard for me was, you know, the bottles that you pump into are these like see-through milk bottles. And I would love to believe that, you know, as a society, we're like, we understand that women breastfeed and they pump and it's like no big deal. It's something that they have to do. But many of my coworkers, you know, I'd be walking through the halls and somebody would want to consult me about an issue. And then they would see the see-through milk bottles and they'd get a little like, oh, I can just wait till you're done. And I'd be like, should you wait till I'm done? Like, what's happening? Like, I'm already pumped this milk. I'm actually done, to be quite honest. But, you know, and
oh no, you're holding it.
Exactly. You know, so there was that. And then, you know, and then the last thing that just drove me kind of bananas was that if you didn't have a fridge, you could put it in a cooler. So this is a cooler that you know, we all use to store our lunch. We put an ice pack in it. We put our food in it. So breastfeeding pumping moms, they do the same thing with their milk. So there's a couple of problems with that. Number one, a cooler hasn't been like innovated since the 1950s, 60s. Like this is the same product. It may look different. It might have a different brand name. It might be more beautiful than the one you bought in 1965, but nobody has truly innovated a cooler. And it's not designed for breast milk. So breast milk has a very specific way that it's supposed to be stored. It's 59 degrees Fahrenheit or cooler. And many moms, like including myself, didn't know if our coolers were cooling our milk right. And then lastly, they're just bulky. They like the ice packs melt by the end of the day. You look in your purse, you've got like a purse full of water. You're hoping it's not your milk that leaked. So there were just like so many compounding factors to why breast milk storage and cooling was not working for me. And I just really looked at my Swell water bottle that was sitting on my desk one day and was like, what? Like, we have this beautiful water bottle, this like stainless steel water bottle that comes in all these like beautiful prints. It's sleek. It just pop it in your bag. It doesn't leak. I was like, we've got to make something like this for breast milk. And that was really the genesis right there. I thought it was a crazy idea, but I told my brother-in-law who had just graduated Babson Business School. And he really was like, crazy ideas turn into multi-million dollar products and companies. Like, you need to go with this. You need to try this. And he really just started like connecting us to engineers who had made products before. And that was really the beginning. Yeah.
So you've talked about the inspiration, but tell us more about the new current product and sort of how it works.
Yeah, sure. So one thing that was really important was I wanted to make sure that other women had experienced this, that it wasn't just an Amber Lee problem. That was the one thing I forgot to say. So when we surveyed hundreds of women in metropolitan areas, we found that over 60% of women were worried about storing and cooling their breast milk. So that was like, okay, we're not just going to make this product for Amber Lee, which would be nice, but we would have been too late anyways, because it was 5 years.
You weren't alone.
Yeah, I wasn't alone. So 5 years of like making prototypes, working with engineers, beta testing prototypes, and just all sorts of things. Making a hardware product, which I'm sure we'll get into, is probably one of the hardest things besides child labor that I've done in my life. but we made Maya. And it is ready. We literally launched last week. So I'm so glad we're here and we can say that. So Maya is a storing, cooling, and monitoring system for breast milk. It attaches directly to the pump that mom's using. So she can pump right into it. I'm going to show you the inner plastic bottle that she pumps into. It keeps breast milk a safe temperature for 16 plus hours. So mom can throw this into her bag, not have to worry. It's like putting a fridge in your purse. And then we have a thermo lid that shows the temperature. Inside Maya, you've got a cooling puck. So it's this sleek stainless steel cooling puck. It's filled with distilled water. It goes, mom puts it in the freezer overnight. And then in the morning, she takes it out. She puts it into the outer stainless steel shell of her Maya. Then there's an inner plastic bottle that mom can pump directly into. It has ounce markings. So pumping moms are obviously concerned about how much milk they're making, hoping they're making enough for their baby. So ounce markings are super important. We thought really long and hard about that. And she attaches the pump, she pumps into it, then she puts her thermo lid onto it. And the thermo lid is great because, like I said before, coolers, you really don't know what temperature they're keeping your breast milk. So the thermo lid, you literally have to double tap and it will reveal the temperature.
Nice.
Very yeah. Sick. So if it's like amazing. A hot day, you know, I don't know, or you're in a meeting a long time and you just want to check out your Maya, make sure it's keeping your breast milk the right temperature. That's all you have to do. And then
like that extra security, just make sure it's on temperature. I love it.
Yeah. That actually came from one of our beta users. We had a pumping mom use one of our prototypes. It was an early prototype, so it didn't work great. So when she got home, she was like, oh, the milk's kind of like a lukewarm. I'm not quite sure if it was stored the right temperature. and she was a beer maker. So she said, my beer machine has a thermometer on it. Like, how hard is it to put a thermometer on this thing? Nice. And our engineer was like, not hard at all. Let's do it.
Nice.
Yeah.
So exciting. I thought it's funny when you were saying you had these challenges as a mom, and you're wondering, is it just me or is it everyone? I can tell you definitely a lot of moms feel the same way.
Yep.
And yeah, I was just going to say that I could have used this. I mean, when I had my daughter 15 years ago, it was exact similar problem because we lived in Rochester, and I had left her at 6 months to go to school in Ithaca. So it's like 2 whole hours. I wouldn't see, I only saw them every 2 weeks.
Okay.
And I remember the Ziploc looking like you do the pump and you put the milk in like Ziploc bags that look like bottles.
Yep.
And I was storing these things. So I'll put it in there, store them. And then when we transported it, my husband would look at it and go like, he wasn't sure if it was good. He's like, it was leaking from the zipper. And
yep.
They never used it. And breaks your heart. Like, I remember having to throw away tons of bags.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's so much work.
It's so much work, too. It's so much work. So definitely. So my question is, how have people responded?
So we are anxiously awaiting user response. We literally sent units out last week. So we're going to start gathering that data and some customer reviews. But moms were like so excited, you know, when the email came out that we were sending it out, you know, people were just excited to get the product in hand and start using it. So I can't wait till we get that feedback.
They definitely will be. Yeah. And it's funny, you're talking about it now, you wonder, how come this doesn't exist, you know?
Right.
How come? Yeah. Amazing. Amazing.
It sounds like this was an adventure making this product. But how about life before Pippi Sips? Were you kind of maker-minded before that, or had you done other projects?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about that. I think a lot of my life has been around bodies of work, and it's something that I like to do. I have a long background in dance. So I was a dance major in college, you know, and doing a dance thesis was optional. It wasn't required. And I think it's very Amber Lee to be like, oh yeah, like a large amount of work over a long period of time. That sounds like something I want to do. So I think that was probably like the first example of me kind of taking on something that I didn't necessarily have to do, but wanted to do, you know, to better myself. You know, dance thesis, I'm not sure if it helps other people, but, you know, I made a body of work that I showed other individuals, and it took me a whole year to do. And then in graduate school, I had to do a thesis, you know, and I was all about that thesis. I was all about doing, you know, I did a literature review thesis where I was combing literature for like 8 to 9 months and then presenting it in an organized fashion, like literally wrote a book. Yeah. So when I look back at my life, I think making or just completing bodies of work is really satisfying to me. And especially if they change the world and help other people out. Yeah. Nice.
Well, it definitely sounds like you've accomplished big challenges in the past. Did you have any challenges getting to where you are today with Pippi Sips?
You betcha. So if you talk, I'm sure you all have talked to other hardware founders, but making hardware, it's just so different. Like when you're in the startup scene and you talk to other startup founders, if they are not making a hardware product, not that their life is easy, I would not say that at all, but it just, they're able to get even just like a prototype quicker, if it's like a software device or an app or something like that, or a service. So it can be like very disheartening to talk to other founders who are not making a hardware product, because you'll be like, oh, I'm on my like 18th prototype and it's not quite working the way I want, or I made this prototype, but it's not manufacturable. You know, we've gone I think we lost count of how many prototypes we've had, but we've had over 5 years, we've had multiple prototypes. We had looks like prototype, we had works like, then making sure that it really works right. You know, you give to a beta user, they use it, getting that feedback, incorporating the feedback. And then the hardest part though is definitely manufacturing, no doubt. Mm-hmm. So we were going into manufacturing right as the global pandemic started.
Yay.
Probably the worst timing ever to start manufacturing a product. Like, we were literally in talks with different vendors who were either closing because of outbreaks in their facilities, closing because they were in a country like China and forced to close, all sorts of things, or they had materials that were started to become part of the global supply chain backup. So like, we needed a certain type of plastic, but it was also the plastic that they used to make vaccine vials. Mm-hmm. We needed, yep. We needed a microchip for our thermo lid. Microchips are, you know, forever on back order. Like, every kid in America ordered a Nintendo Switch, and right. Those have microchips. People needed a car, those have microchips, all sorts of things. So it started to feel insurmountable in many ways, but somehow we got to the other end of it. I'm trying to think. And then I think probably the last thing I'll say around that is, our second to last rendering of Maya was beautiful, but not manufacturable. Uh-huh. So I should have brought my prototypes up here, but we had, our puck had this kind of like thing that pointed up into the plastic bottle so that the cooling energy would go into the milk much quicker. And it kind of looked like a nipple, to be quite honest. We're talking about breastfeeding and pumping. So it really looked like a nipple. And both the stainless steel manufacturer that would make that and then the plastic bottle manufacturer, neither one could be made.
Wow.
The plastic would be too thin on the bottle, so it would collapse, and they could not get the puck to, they would have to make two sides of it and then glue it together and like, da, da, da.
Interesting. It sounds really straightforward, right?
You know, right. Like... yeah. The things you don't think about. Yeah. So that was another kind of, so we had to redo the puck and the bottle right before we went into manufacturing, and we got feedback from the vendors.
During your prototyping process, were there certain tools that you used, certain programs? Did you do anything digitally first to kind of get renderings? Can you walk us through a little bit of that process?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm not an engineer. I'm a mental health professional, but I've definitely learned a lot about product development along the way. Originally, we worked with two engineers to really get to a works-like prototype. And they were two engineers who had built a tea canister that heated tea to the right temperature. So green tea needs a specific temperature, red tea, black tea, da, da, da. So they had built a product. They had that under their belts, and they were amazing. And they helped us to get through a works-like prototype. And a lot of that involved 3D printing, and then sending us that. So a lot of it involved renderings. So showing us renderings, asking our input, asking, you know, did we think moms would like the shape, the size, would it attach to the pump correctly, all those kind of things. And then we kind of met, like, we worked with them as long as we could. And then they were super honest and direct and transparent and said, so now you've reached this point where you need an industrial designer, because mm-hmm. you need to make this beautiful, right? Like, functional, you know, step one, let's make this work for moms. But step two, you know, and that was always part of my vision for the product, was something beautiful and sleek. Most products designed for moms are actually designed for the baby, not for the mom. Mm-hmm. Like, we always, you know, I can go on, I could go on a tangent about that, but we often, when a mom has a baby, right, all focus is on baby. And so you get these products with Mickey Mouse on it, or little flowers or bubbles or whatever. And it's never about the mom and what she wants. So that was always a guiding principle in making this product. So then they gave us the name of about three different designers, and we interviewed those designers. We looked at their work, and we chose a gentleman, Daniel Chu from Pragmatic Innovation. And he has been on this journey with us ever since. And we worked through many renderings with him, and he is an engineer, but he is truly an artist. He really understands how to make something beautiful. And that is really, so he would send us renderings. We had renderings where really funny ones where it's like a cat face on it or something like that. And that was like one of those times when Amberlee was like, no, like we're not making for baby, we're making for mom. So like, this is very cute. We had another one that looked truly like an egg, you know, because as you're like having these ideas, you're brainstorming. So like, Dan is an artist, and he was showing us all the kind of things that were clouding his mind and like giving us just all these different possible shapes and sizes and colors. And so, yeah, we did that for a while. And then, but at the same time, we were still trying to figure out function a bit. So we had one design where we made these little like stainless steel ice cubes that were in like a tube almost. And then that would drop into, I don't know if you know Corksicle products. So Corksicle is a company that's really for chilling like wine and beer. And they make this like icicle shaped thing that goes into your wine bottle and gets your like white wine.
I've seen that.
Yeah. So we had like a similar concept.
Like iced wine without diluting your wine. Is there exactly a whole sort of goal? Yes.
Yep. Yeah. And they make beautiful products. We ordered many of their products over the years to get inspiration. So one of our first works like involved something like that, where we were taking a tube of stainless steel ice cubes and like putting it in the bottle with milk. That didn't work great. So we kind of had to go back and forth. And then somehow we landed on the puck and it being under the bottle because the cooling energy goes up. But we knew that it had to like touch much of the plastic bottle, which is why Dan at first had this like nipple going up into it, which was beautiful, but not manufacturable. Then we, once we got to manufacturing and realized we couldn't do the nipple thing, then it was kind of this puck that like held the bottle, and we tested it multiple times under different conditions. And we're really happy to see that it cooled the milk the way we needed. Yeah. So there was so many, different ideas and concepts. And, you know, so I'm not a engineer, and my co-founder, who's also my husband, not an engineer, but you know, Dan played with us and allowed us to think, you know, of different ways that it could be shaped or look like. You know, it was really a collaborative process along the way. You know, we'd wake up in the middle of the night and be like, what if the puck looked like this? Or what if we cooled the milk like this? And yeah, we had one other rendition where the plastic bottle had two like indents in the side of it, and we put two kind of icicle shaped things in the side of it. Also not manufacturable. So. Lots of cool ideas, but like,
I know,
when it comes to like a factory actually making product, it's, you know, you can make a rocket ship in your mind, but to make a functional rocket ship is a whole nother process.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. That was a great description of, you know, your process and how you got where you are. It's very, I can imagine it, very visual how you explained it.
Yeah.
Very fascinating.
This is a true test if I can describe things visually, like with words.
No, it's exciting. And it's,
you did well.
Okay, good.
Exactly. Well, we still have, I'm going to switch gears to one fun question at least. Well, I had fun all along, but we're calling these the fun questions because it takes a different shape. It's not about the product. It's just a question about you. So how would you spend an ideal day?
An ideal day. I'm an Aquarius, so I'm a water person. My husband makes fun of me. He's always like, the closer you are to water, like the more calm you are. Is that you too, Laura? Laura's like, yeah. So I have two daughters who are also, one of them's an Aquarius, the other one isn't, but they're just like little fish. They love swimming and being in water. They're 6 and 10. So an ideal day would be with my family at the beach, at a river. I really love fresh water, like a river or a lake. I just, you know, my future goal is to like live on a lake or a river someday. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a water baby. I was like in the pool at 2 yep. or 1 and on skis at 4 and
you know,
yeah. Like, yep. Swim team, water polo, you name it, lifeguard, all of it. I was spent my whole youth in the pool, in the lake, at the beach.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah,
I love it too. I live by all the water right now. I don't live on it yet though, but I get that goal.
Nice. Yeah.
So what is next for Pippi Sips?
Great question. So we're really excited to just like go into September real hard. We actually are doing more of a soft launch right now because we had no idea when this product would be ready. So we were like on, it was so nerve-wracking for the past month because we had this one last piece of our product that was being made and it was being shipped from China, and then it was like held up at customs, and then it was in the United States at an airport, but we didn't know which one it was at. And so like literally we're just like every day we're getting these like updates, and we're getting them in the middle of the night, right? Because China's 10 has a 10-hour difference. So we'd like wake up and they'd say it's at the airport in the US, but they wouldn't tell us what airport. And then we couldn't get the right airport until the next day when they could respond. Anyway, so we were just like on pins and needles, but you know, the universe really looks out for you. I actually quit my full-time job the week before last, and then the product was ready. Thank you. Wow. The product was ready Wednesday after my last Friday at the job. And it was just like, I don't know. I feel like the universe just kind of like opened up, not to sound like too woo woo, but it just like, okay, product's ready. Let's start shipping. So we started shipping to all our pre-orders, letting our friends and family know, sent out a newsletter. But of course we're going on vacation the last 2 weeks of August. So, so the plan is to ramp things up in September, really start our social media advertising, get into the press a bit, do some in-person events, start going to some trade shows like lactation consultant conferences, baby expo, stuff like that, and really just hit it hard in September, and getting Maya into pumping mom's hands everywhere. And we can't wait. And we're also really excited to announce that we're part of this SKU Dallas Accelerator, which specializes in consumer packaged goods. So we're starting that kind of next week while I'm on vacation. Don't, you know, on vacation. But we're starting that accelerator process, which goes through November. And they specialize in marketing consumer products. And so they will be giving us a ton of support. You know, we're first time founders, first time launching a product. So we need all the help we can get. I'm not ashamed to say that out loud. Yeah. So those are really the plans. And then consumer feedback. I cannot wait to hear how a pumping mom uses this product. I think that just, I can't wait. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait either.
Yeah,
great. Do you have any questions for the maker community?
That's a great question. I mean, I think I love hearing kind of just success stories and what kind of starts the snowball effect of something becoming like a product or a service becoming viral. I've heard, I don't know, so it's not a question, but just that like, I love hearing from founders and what kind of worked for them. I think there's a lot of like throwing shit against the wall, excuse my French, but like you have a list of things that like the startup community is like, do this, do that. And investors are like, do this, do that. And like, it to me feels like you don't know which one of them is going to work. Right. Like, sure, you could put like millions of dollars into social media advertising and that will sell you a lot of units, but you could also save a lot of money and because a mom support group has started spreading the word about how Maya changed their life. And then it's just from one mom to another, or you just go to like a breastfeeding support group in the area, and that's where the word starts to spread. Yeah. So I always just like love hearing from founders when they kind of found that, what pushed them over the edge of really becoming known and successful and people wanting their product.
And so, where can people learn more?
Great question. So our website, www.pippysips.com. Follow us on social media. We're very active on Instagram. We're also on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook. But I'd say Instagram is a great place. You can also subscribe to our newsletter. When you go to our website, you'll get a 5% discount on your first order. Nice. We have a sale going on right now. So if you put in the code LAUNCH in all caps, you'll get 15% off. It's Breastfeeding Awareness Month. So we're really trying to be a part of that and support breastfeeding and pumping moms everywhere.
And all of those links will be in the podcast notes for our listeners.
Awesome.
Well, thanks for joining us today. This has been a lot of fun and educational. And we wish you all the luck in the world and hope to hear more from you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was lovely.
We had so much fun, and get back to making breast milk even cooler.
Yes. There you go, Laura. You got a job right there.
Thank you for listening to the Fully Make a Prayer podcast. We're streaming on all platforms, so join us each week. Learn more about today's podcast at fullymakeaprayer.com.
We're social, so keep in touch. You can find us on Twitter as PHLMake.
Also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest as Fully Make a Prayer, all one word. And be sure to hit the subscribe button for future podcasts.
See you next week.
The opinions expressed by the guests of the Fully Make a Prayer podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the hosts or producers. If you enjoy the Fully Make a Prayer podcast, please consider making a donation at ko-fi.com. That's ko-fi.com. Search for JD Maker or go to ko-fi.com/JDMaker/tiers. Your support helps offset the costs of recording, editing, and maintaining the Fully Make a Prayer podcast. Supporters at any of our tiers will receive a shout out on the podcast and via our social network. Thanks.